You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota. Yes, I've been away for a week. That's 5 wonderful days in Curaçao. Highly recommend it to those of you out there wanting to visit an easy-to-visit Caribbean island. So that's my second of the ABC islands with the family. I've been to Aruba and now Curaçao, so only lacking Bonaire. Very close to Colombia, only an hour and a half flight from Bogota. And, you know, you should really check out some of the deals that Avianca puts on every now and then, because I think I bought the flights back in February for November, could you imagine? But I think I paid less than $120 per person round trip to get my family out there. I don't recall how much it was because it was so long ago. Anyway, great holiday, 5 days away. I'm back, I'm refreshed, I'm ready to hit the podcast again. And this week we will be talking to Bogota Pop-Ups. Yes, and a little bit more about that later. Sarah Lisa, a Norwegian-Italian here in Bogota. But let's take a moment, of course, and you know, we need to reflect, because times are troubling at the moment. Of course, the attacks in Paris, Mali, Beirut, Nigeria, wherever you want to mention, in truth, it's a troubling time. And it's given rise to what I would say is a sort of quacking, a slew of quacking simpletons, always saying that one is getting more coverage than the other, and so on. And yes, this is true, but it's also a reality of the news gathering standards that we have today, and that's the reality of it. If we're going to be plugged into celebrity and reality television, where now the news is whether Kim Kardashian has had a facelift or been divorced 6 times, and that's more important than, let's say, an atrocity, it's not the fault of the journalist. If you want to read about what's going on in the world, there are editorial magazines out there, newspapers out there, doing the unthinkable, the thankless task, an expensive task of covering these things. You can subscribe to them and you can get the information as it's needed. This is important, you know. And if you want to see these news pieces in the mainstream press, write to your editors, write to the newspaper owners, and retweet and share those articles that are of interest to you. It's because, you know, these clickbait, it gets picked up. People understand that when something is needed to be covered and people want to read about it, that, you know, there's a whole algorithm in these editorials showing which are the most read and which are the most followed. So I just thought, you know, a little reflection on that at this point, not only on the tragedy of what's been going on in the last couple of weeks and what's going on, of course, in Belgium at the moment. And my heart goes out to everyone who's involved or has loved ones or friends or families or even just, you know, remembers happier times of having visited Paris or Belgium or so on. It's tough. I mean, everything makes Colombia, I mean, we've got to bring it back to Colombia, seems so simple, in truth, you know. It doesn't seem so complex anymore when you put it into the grand scheme of things. So those are my reflections for the day and for the beginning of this podcast. Of course, this will be a lighter podcast. Columbia Calling, as always, strives to, you know, mix it up a little bit. And, I hope you enjoy it, because I think that the Bogota pop-ups is an interesting concept, and hopefully there will be those of you out there listening to this who want to sign up and want to be a part of it. So that's the idea. That's what we've got going on. If you want to get in touch, if you want to recommend people to be interviewed, if you want to recommend or write in, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. Of course, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and the website, columbiacallingradio.com. www.richardmccall.com. It's always there as well, and there's a contact form on that too. So, yes, you can follow me and my writing on richardmccall.com as well. And I love hearing from you. I love receiving the messages, support, even hate. I mean, someone out there is listening. But I know that we're pushing above 7,000 listeners and downloads per week. So this is very flattering. And thank you to all of you out there doing this. And thank you to all of those of you out there sharing these podcasts with friends and family and people who you think that it may be of interest to. So without further ado, we will take a short break and be back with Sarah Lisa Ostovic and talking about the Bogota pop-ups. Thank you again. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota, Colombia. It's echoey because we're in the studio. I'm here in the office. I've got a visitor today here with me. Her name is Sarah Lisa Ostovic. She's half Italian, half Norwegian, and living in Colombia. Now, that is exotic. You know, an Englishman in Colombia, yeah, we're a dime a dozen now. But someone who can say they're Italian, Italo-Norwegian, Noro-Italian, I don't even know how you say it. But anyway, she's here. She's here. She's doing interesting stuff, and I'm very proud to have her. I'm very pleased to have her on the show, and that she had the time to speak to us, because I know she's busy. So, Sarah Lisa, tell me a little bit about how you came to be here in Colombia and how long you've been here.
Thanks, Richard. I arrived a year and 2 months ago.
Wow.
I just finished my master's degree in New York, and I was looking for my dream job, and I found it here. So I packed my bags and came down here.
It was your dream job to come to Colombia?
It was. I wanted to work on gender issues, on food security, agricultural development, hopefully at the UN in a Latin American country. So I basically got all my dreams fulfilled.
In one fell swoop,
you
got that job.
In one fell swoop, here, yeah, at the World Food Programme. So that was really, really lovely.
That's amazing.
Very lucky.
And anyway, I mean, you know, there are many, many foreigners here working in international organisations, NGOs and so on. But how, I mean, gender and food security, I mean, that's serious stuff. I mean, how did you find it here in Colombia? I mean, that's a huge question. Maybe for the listeners, you could explain a little what working in that field entails.
Wow, that is huge. Yeah. Working in that field can entail a lot of things. I basically studied gender and development for a long time, and here I was a consultant helping the office integrate a gender perspective and also protection perspective into all of their work. So it means instead of just implementing a development program, kind of blindly assuming that everyone has the same needs or challenges or problems, you try to look at it from a gender perspective and make sure you're listening to men and women, girls and boys and communities, see if they have different needs and opportunities and challenges depending on their gender, if that plays in to it, which it often does. And the protection side is kind of the human rights aspect, where you're trying to preserve people's dignity and not cause them, you know, unnecessary risks or potentially putting them in danger by trying to help them. So, for example, if you're doing a food distribution, you'll try to not, you know, put the food distribution center across an area with guerrilla groups operating and putting this carrot for people to cross through a dark, dangerous forest at night where anything could happen. So, I mean, that's just a very simplified example, but that's kind of what it is.
But true, but and also sort of socially important, not putting the food distribution center in front of one family and far from another family as well. I would imagine there's all the sort of local politics.
There's a lot of local politics, who are the decision makers in the community and how to work around that, and then also respect those communities and cultures without being this foreigner coming and saying, hey, you guys should be gender equal and this is how things should be, because maybe not.
But that's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, because you're going to be seen as the, well, let's say, all-knowing foreigner. You're there to help, and well, I mean, it's just very, very, I mean, it's just got to be incredibly difficult, but fascinating. So you managed to, I imagine, in that year that you were working for this the World Food Programme, you travelled all around Colombia.
I traveled quite a bit.
Not to genuine tourist areas, I think.
No. No, I mean, the World Food Program here works in 12 departments with the highest level of conflict and displaced people and poverty. They're all sort of in the same places. So I was in Choco, where there's basically no roads and you have to travel by river to indigenous communities that are just like landing in the middle of, you know, Niger, you know, there's nothing there. And who don't even speak Spanish, actually.
So were you with the Embera communities and other indigenous communities?
Yes.
Along the Quito River and other places, or the Baudó, or...
The Baudó.
Mm-hmm. And did you get to see the effects of illegal mining and on the area and things like that? Maybe you can tell me, maybe you can't, but I've just been reading about it, so I'm fascinated at this moment.
We were told that their food is unsafe because of the illegal mining. We had to be careful with the things we were saying and asking about because we don't know the protection risks they're facing, or we have an idea and we don't want to put them at risk by asking about them. So it's very interesting and complicated.
I mean, when I had you down for the interview, I wasn't going to delve so much into this stuff,
right.
But it is so interesting, and it's something about which most listeners out there won't know, and that's the truth of it. That's why I suddenly got very excited and asked you all these questions, because, I mean, the truth of it is, I read yesterday a government statistic, which usually means it's not correct, but a government statistic means that 90% of all mining in the Choco is illegal.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge if you think of 90% illegal mining in the Choco. And, of course, a lot of it is for gold. And so they use, you know, mercury, which goes straight into the water. And then it's, of course, as you say, damaging the food. And you worked in the World Food Program. So there we go. It all feathers in very nicely. And at the moment, I am actually writing the script for a documentary about the Choco, but more onto the coast. But I think that the rivers obviously feeding out onto the Pacific coast would have been tainted too. So I've been looking into it. That's why the statistic of 90% is in my head. But let's move on from there. But I mean, you know, the Choco, where people visit, is normally around Nuki, Valle, maybe Bayo Solano and stuff. Did you get out to those wonderful areas where it's just nature and all of its glory?
No. Sadly, no.
That's for another time, let's say. And you went down to, because I think it's really interesting that you, I mean, again, like you said, you visited places, or like I said, you visited places which aren't on the tourist map. I mean, you visited Caquetá, I assume, as well, which
yes.
I have been to, deep Caquetá. And then that's way off where anyone's, and people can't even place it on a map. What whereabouts were you there in Caquetá?
I was in Florence.
Okay, so in the capital, is it? Or Puerto Rico? I can't remember. Florence is one of the major cities of Caquetá.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we were basically traveling by car to areas where we had projects and food distribution. So mm-hmm. some confined communities that were only allowed to go into mm-hmm. certain times, if some people say so.
This is the truth. It's the truth.
They have big tanks along the streets in Caquetá. It's pretty, it's odd. It's very different from being in Bogotá.
But this is what you wanted.
Yeah.
This is what you wanted. But it's a great experience. It's a great experience. But you did your year there, and now you've decided you're taking a break, but you're exploring different opportunities now. And I think it's really interesting because you've gone from one thing, but it's still kind of related because World Food Program.
It's food just on another level.
And so what, you know, I really didn't know about this type of event that you've launched here in Bogotá, and I think it's really interesting because it's about inviting strangers to come and eat at your home. Launch into it. Tell me. Give me your pitch.
Oh, boy. The pressure is on.
Yeah.
We started doing pop-up dinners uh-huh. in our home in January. I was cooking a lot, and I love food, and I love telling people what they're eating, helping them understand like where it comes from, how it's produced, and that's why it's so delicious, because it's produced in a good way. And so my boyfriend is very entrepreneurial, and he suggested that we basically steal this idea that they do in a lot of different countries, which is pop-up dinners. So this exists.
Adopting.
Adopting. this exists in the US and in Europe and Argentina and many different places, and we hadn't found it here. So we started basically inviting people into our home and having a restaurant style meal, like six courses, and for 10 people sitting around our large table with other people that don't know each other. So it's like a social dinner party for strangers with good, high-quality homemade food.
I think it's really, really incredible. And prior to this launching here, your version of it in Bogota, you had attended some in New York or in other parts of the world?
I had not. Andres had tried to in Paris, but they were all sold out. In New York, we attended something called the White Dinner, Le Dîner Blanc, which is like this pop-up picnic for like 800 people.
And you have to dress white, right? Exactly. But the food's not white.
The food is not white.
Okay.
No. So, but we'd heard about it and we're really curious to see what it would be like here and if people in Bogota would be open to these kinds of experiences. And it went pretty well.
Yeah.
So I think they are open to these kinds of experiences.
I think they are open to these
things. Both foreigners and locals. So that's really nice to see.
So before we've got a few minutes before the break. Let's get into the nitty gritty of this. Yeah, it's dinner for 10 people, strangers. They pay to come. Roughly how much is the... Roughly. You don't need to give me a full thing, but roughly how much per person are you charging?
So when this started out, we were doing the dinners, as I said, six courses in our house with a welcome drink, and we charged 80,000 pesos per person, which is a lot, unfortunately. But it's for what you get. It's sort of not a lot.
But six courses for 80,000. I mean, you wouldn't get that in Raphael.
I don't want to compare myself to
Raphael. Well, come on. Okay. You wouldn't even get six courses in El Corral for 80,000 then.
Actually, when you say that like that, yeah, and every time I think about it in dollars, I'm like, oh my God, I'm giving this away.
Yeah.
But you can't do that. You have to think in pesos. So yeah, but now since June, we started working with other hosts so that it's not just me in my house. Though that's lovely, lots of other people have wonderful experiences and food to offer. And there the events can be smaller, larger, our smallest was six people, our biggest was 30.
It's a lot of people.
And the prices range from 40,000 to, 400 if you're doing a weekend away with 2 days of cooking classes in a castle.
Okay, we're going to talk about that one later, the 400,000 weekend away. I think it's fascinating because, I enjoy having people around. I enjoy having new friends around. I enjoy meeting new people. But to do it on a regular basis would wear me out. Well, I think I'm talking as a first-time father, and also as an old curmudgeon and somewhat of a hermit because I work from home and this is my little palace. That for me would be trying as well, all the time, new people. But then you seem much more open and happy than I am. I'm just a bitter old man. But, have you had people turn up to your house that you'd be like, God, I wish this person wouldn't have come?
No.
Okay, good.
Actually not. We've had all kinds of people, but I think it's kind of the self-selection process that if you're open to this kind of experience, and it's kind of risky because you don't know where you're going, you don't know what you're going to eat some of the time, you don't know who you're going to meet, if you're going to like it. And it's Colombia, so you have to also trust that these people won't just take your money and run away, which we don't promise. So it's kind of a self-selection where the ones that want to go to this are kind of cool people.
Okay. It's not like a entering Pan Americana and you have to lock your bags up in a locker beforehand or staple. they're worried you're going to be a pickpocket or something, or you're going to shoplift something. You haven't had anything of that type.
Now, don't give them any ideas.
No, but I think so. I think listeners would also be concerned. I'm not giving them ideas. I think
listeners,
because obviously my listeners are incredibly cool, well-rounded, and international people. And that's the idea. That's the idea. Well, I think it's really interesting. Now, we'll close down this section of the chat before we come into the final section. And where can people find out about your dinners?
So we're aiming to become like an Airbnb with a fancy website, but for now we have a very basic website. It's bogotapopups.com, where you can sign up to our mailing list, and then all the information of our events, we have about four per month, is sent out to our mailing list. And then you can, when you get the email, you can see, oh, this is of interest to me, and then you email back and say, hey, I want to go. That's how it works.
And then you have to, you sort out a payment plan because it needs to be prepaid because, of course, you're investing in the food and the exactly. time and the cooking.
And we, most of all, we don't want to end up with a table for 10 people and only 5 people showing up because of the social, like, it's funner if there's, if the table is full.
Yes, and Columbia's a good at confirming and not turning up. I will tell you that because I had that at my wedding.
Oh, oops.
Confirmed seats at my wedding, and then they, oh no, it's like, I couldn't make it. Thanks. Wow. Thank you. Anyway, I'm still bitter at that, you know, it was 2011. I'm still bitter about that. But never mind. We'll take a short break. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McColl. We're talking to Sarah Lisa Ostovic, who's half Italian, half Norwegian, and she's running the BogotaPopUps.com, let's say, dining experience, let's say. And we're gonna delve into this a little bit more in the next section of this show. So thank you for listening, and don't go away. And we're back again. We're here with Sarah Lisa Ostovic, who I have explained previously is doing the BogotaPopUps.com dining experience here in Bogota. Very cool because it's the first of its kind here, and really you're doing something innovative and socially, let's say, adventurous, because, you know, with Colombians, I don't know, maybe they're suspicious, or are they ready to go to someone else's house and eat, are they ready to pay this kind of money? But you seem to have made a success of this. Now, since you started, let's say, was it full-time in June, more or less?
September, actually.
September,
yeah.
So we're down to November, but September, how many meals have you done?
Since September, I'm not sure, but okay. Since January, we've done, I think, 23 events.
That's a fair amount.
Yeah, over 250 people have come from over 30 countries. So it's really interesting.
It's really interesting. That's
but fun.
The majority are Colombians, I would imagine, or did it kind of split?
It depends on the event. Uh-huh. Sometimes we have, you know, 90% Colombian, and sometimes we have 90% foreigner, and sometimes we're 50-50. So I think overall we're kind of balancing out.
And as you are a gender expert, as we mentioned, how is this working out between, because it's, I imagine it's first come, first serve, you know, those who first, you know, reserve and make the payment are on the list, but has it worked out as more women or more men?
Surprisingly, we have more women.
More women.
Men.
So to all the single guys out there.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Single women seem to come alone more than single men.
Interesting.
I mean, there's exceptions, but that's what we've generally found.
But it must be a security thing as well for single women knowing they're coming to a safe place for something interesting.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Rather than, let's say, going out and sitting at the singles bar.
I guess, because you're going to sit with other people who are
and other people and
alone. So it's,
yeah.
It's, I guess, if they trust that it's a safe place, mm-hmm. which they do since we're checking people's identities before accepting them to dinner. Then I guess it's just a nice thing to do instead of sitting alone on a Thursday night or a Saturday night, or you can go and meet new people that you wouldn't otherwise come across very easily and hopefully make new friends.
So you're the dining equivalent of the Colombian Cupid website.
We haven't thought of it like that. I'm not sure how I feel about it becoming a meat market, but...
I wasn't suggesting a meat market because, but so let's before this gets out of hand here. thank you for meat market. That's a phrase I haven't heard in a long time. That's truly from London. You did study in London, didn't you? So,
yeah.
So hang on a second. How is it that you screen your guests? I think we need to go into this a little bit. You need to tell us a little bit about, the vetting process so that people listening online and listening on their iPods and to the podcast and so on will say, hang on, it's not some sort of weird cult or something like that. I'm not suggesting it is either, but you need to have, you obviously have in place a security system.
Yeah, it's quite ad hoc, but we try our best. So basically, if it's someone that's been referred to us by someone who has already come to dinner or by friends, then no problem. Perfect. Fine. If it's someone that comes to us through some of the international groups here, like the American Women's Club or the UN Spouses Network, then okay. Yeah, we trust you. And then if it's someone who just found us on the internet, then we end up in the awkward situation of having to Google stalk them, see if they have a LinkedIn profile, a Facebook profile. If we think we found them, we send them a friend request and say, hey, this is you. Please accept me and write me back, and then you can unfriend me. I'm not meaning to be weird here. We just need to try to ensure that you're a decent person who's not just trying to target us for some kind of nefarious business. But, I mean, generally it's been fine and people understand and are kind of happy that we try to pay attention so that, I mean, you are going to someone's house or you're having someone come over to your house if you're a host. So it's kind of important.
Well, I would be happy. I would be fine with you looking up my, let's say, internet footprint. I would be fine, to check out that I was a reasonably sane person and so on and so forth. Now this is, so you've got an international Colombian. Have you ever turned anyone away?
Not for safety reasons, no. But we have, I mean, we fill the events all the time and need to turn people away because they're full.
Okay, so, not for bad reasons.
So, no, just like, oops, sorry.
Not the guy whose Facebook profile's in a bondage outfit or something.
No.
Okay.
It's been fine.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that this is, attracting the right kind of people. So this is an idea you had, adopting it, like we said, from the international pages. The formal reason is to foster connections.
Between people. Yes, okay. So our philosophical motivation is that we love to bring people together. We want to live in a city where people come together and meet new people, are open-minded, make new friends, new experiences, and doing that while at the same time promoting sustainable, delicious, homemade food and local culture.
Nice. And the practical reason?
The practical reason was that it was cooking too much and we needed someone to eat the food.
But, I mean, you obviously love cooking.
Yes, I love cooking.
But you're not a chef.
No.
But you could be.
My mother would not agree with that.
But which side of your family is the Italian side?
My mom.
Oh, okay. So she's the matriarch of Italian.
She's what I aspire to be,
But I think you probably are an excellent cook. I haven't tried your cooking. I haven't tried the cooking. So for those of you out there, I cannot vouch for it. But by all accounts, more than 30 nationalities, 300 so guests. I have to say that, someone likes the cooking. So therefore, she must be a good cook. What kind of food are you cooking? I mean, you say you do different evenings, you do different sort of themes and so on. You've done Norwegian food?
I did. In May, we did a Norwegian dinner. It's really popular.
Which has got to be really different for a Colombian market. I mean, they don't know what it is.
Everyone knows salmon.
Yeah.
And it's different preparations. I tried to steer away from the obvious and do things that are just not that known outside. So I smuggled in some brown cheese and...
You smuggled it in, like in a diplomatic bag.
I know. Just made like typical Norwegian preparations, a stew of cabbage and lamb, for example, and lefse, Norwegian flatbreads, and homemade bread with shrimp, like a shrimp open sandwich, buffet sandwich, and just different things. But I mean, I have to say that the pop-ups, it used to be just me cooking. Like the first 5 months, it was only at our house, but now we are basically building this platform for people who want to offer different kinds of food and cultural experiences. So we have a lot of different cooks and chefs who are making really nice food and offering different kinds of experiences. So I can't take all the credit. In different houses, in wine cellars, in parks, in a castle, in artist studios and galleries.
Really?
Yes.
Very cool.
It's
so how many different venues do you have now? Like, let's say, how many different cooks, let's say?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think we have about 8 hosts.
Okay.
But, and then some venues, because we also match people who want to cook with if they don't have a place to cook, with a place that they can go and have an event. Mm-hmm. So it's all a work in progress, and I'm not sure about the exact count, but we vet each host to ensure they can give a really good experience. Mm-hmm. And then I work hand in hand with them to kind of create a beautiful event.
So you're, I mean, but you are the event planner, basically, though. I mean, let's say the cook decides. So you've got a different cook who says, listen, I've got this wine cellar, which would be great. Let's do it in there. And you go, you check it out. You know that this person can cook, but you help them because you've got the platform as well. You get you, the reservations are arriving to you.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, as a platform, we offer like eaters, customers, these different events that we can kind of vouch for are nice, good events. And then to the people who want to host events, we're offering our network and then all our support in terms of helping them create a beautiful experience, deciding on the price, finding a good date. Marketing it, doing the reservations, taking the payments, checking security, all that part. So yeah, I don't aspire to be an event planner.
I was going to move on to that.
That's not what I want to do. So the hope is to automate this process a bit more and to give hosts more independence in, and they are quite independent in creating their events. So we have all kinds of things. This weekend we have an artist who's going to give a 2-hour art class.
Cool.
And then she's also an artist in the kitchen, so she's making cuts with homemade jams and other toppings. And we're doing a trip to an organic farm, which I've kind of co-organized with this wonderful organization called La Canasta that brings agroecological produce directly to consumers in Bogota from nearby farms. So we have different hosts doing different experiences, or we help them match with either a location or a cook or something like that.
Now, you've mentioned twice the castle. I want to know about the castle. Everything's great because you and I are from a different part of the world where castles are the norm. It's not an ordinary thing here at Castle. So tell us a little bit about this weekend away in a castle.
So through my wine provider, Vinos del Rio, the owner there, she put me in touch with this lady who owns a beautiful castle and close to Anapoima. And this woman, she organizes these weekends of food and relaxation and this beautiful surrounding. So I met with her and she needed someone to do her marketing. So we basically worked out perfectly because she's a host with a high attention to detail, wants to make really nice events for people. And I'm looking for people exactly like her to offer beautiful experiences to our people. And so it's basically 2 days of cooking classes, a photography class, live music, and everything included. So it's in 2 weekends and we're fully booked and we're hoping to do more. So it's really
fantastic.
Nice.
Fantastic. Yeah. So how many people are coming to that?
It's 12 people.
12 people. Uh-huh. So it's a very intimate group as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you think castle, you think, we've got 40 rooms and
it's amazing. Like the pictures, it looks like this fairy tale castle.
Yeah.
It has like 6 bedrooms.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. And Anapoima's got a wonderful climate. That's where the president goes and has his holidays. He has a house down there. So there you go. You're in good company.
Okay.
You're either in A, the safest place in Colombia, or B, the least safe place in Colombia, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my apartment. Right around the corner from him. Either it's super safe, or I'm going to get exploited any day.
Yeah, we can digress onto that. Is that he just, you know, why did he decide, you know, in his first term that he wasn't going to live in the palace? Yeah, I guess, you know, because he's a man of the people, so, you know, he'd slum it in Rosales, you know.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's another story. They're neither here nor there. Now, that's really cool that you're doing these things. And, of course, you've got, you know, the owner of this castle, Anapoima, obviously is an event planner, so she's going to take, you know, the reins. But you are the person who's done the marketing of it and, you know, organizing. Have you been out? You've been out to see the place?
Not yet.
Okay, but you will
be
good.
It's in the works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you do know that, I love it, you've got all these contacts to different things, like La Canasta, who do the, it's kind of like that produce box you can get in London as well, from organic, locally sourced producers, and you get, you know, one a week of what is in season as well, without having to, you know, hydroponically farm strawberries out of season and stuff, and then, you know, drive up the markets and so on. La Canasta, I think that's really good. Have you seen there's a farm out near, I think it's either there in Fusagasuga or Facatativa, great indigenous names that I often like a tongue twisters, but are in different parts of outside of Bogota, but there is an edible flower farm. somewhere in those regions. That would be interesting for you. But I don't know how much edible flowers fill you up.
I haven't heard about that, but that's really nice. Yeah. To decorate dishes.
No, yeah. I think it
automatically makes them look a lot better if you put an edible flower on it.
But there's a whole edible flower thing, and that could be something that would be, I mean, you know, people would be interested. And Colombians probably don't know about this farm on the outskirts of Bogota. I will have to look up the idea.
Please put me in touch.
I don't have the details. But I will look for
it. Someone out there, please put me in touch.
Yeah. If you know of this edible flower, and if you can correct me if it's in Fusagasuga or in Fakatativa. I think it's in Fusagasuga.
I think you made that up. That does not exist.
Yes, Fakatativa. Oh, okay. Yeah, they're both very good indigenous names. Now, Fusagasuga, which is on the way towards Anapoima, is the site of where Colombia had its, I would say this in inverted commas, detention camps during World War II. So there you go. They weren't detention camps in the fashion that we know in Europe, Auschwitz, that sort of thing, but they have it there. It was a hotel, La Sabana, and Hotel España were there for German, Italian, and Japanese families. They were, the men were held there over the Genoa. So there you go. But in nice weather, at very least.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate that I've digressed onto that. But I just thought I'd be up. Now, what else have you got in the works, because this castle thing in a couple of weeks' time is massive. This is going to be your tour de force, your pièce de résistance, and everything else, because this will be, you know, your calling card when you say, when on the website you have the photos of it and what you've done. I mean, you're going to be too popular. You're going to have to look for more things. So you must have other things in the pipeline.
Yes.
We're in November, right? So we must be thinking of the Christmas season.
The problem with the Christmas season is that people leave town.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely. One of our hosts, her name is Diana. She runs something called Comiendo Cuento, which is another food project. She does lunches every Friday. She's going to do another dinner for us. She already did one in August where she had a local jazz band play.
Cool.
So we're hoping for another one of those. We're, as I mentioned, this artist with the art class, meeting we're organizing something with another artist who has a gorgeous house in La Calera, who wants to give drawing lessons with food. So we're bringing in this whole cultural aspect as well in the event. So cultural, that could mean that we're using local ingredients, like that's what I really care about, sustainable food, local produce, recipes with a tradition, and, you know, food culture, basically. But then culture can also be sort of things outside of the kitchen. So partnering with local artists and musicians and galleries and doing just these multidimensional events. So closer to Christmas, we might do like some kind of novenas events. I'm going to do another one of my six-course dinners.
How long does it take you to prepare for a six-course dinner? I have to ask.
Well, I'm not a professional. So it takes me like 2 days, and if it's complicated things, I might do something every day for a week, depending on, you know, what it is. If I'm making macajon, it's like,
time-consuming.
French macajon?
Macajon.
Yeah, so okay. That's... it's
so that's macaroons? Is that what I would say in English?
Yes,
it's like a sweet.
It's a sweet.
Okay. It's my English accent, but a macaron.
It depends.
Because, I mean, that's 60 platters. I know it's six different platters.
It's a lot of cleaning up.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, come on. Do you hire someone in to help you with the serving and cleaning? No.
No, my boyfriend, he's wonderful.
He's the dishwasher.
He used to be a waiter, so he does the serving with a real professional flair. And then our dishwasher is helping. But otherwise, it's me. And
does he wear a waistcoat when he's there?
No.
Okay. you haven't made
him. Tell me.
Very good. I'm glad to hear this. I'm glad to hear this is a joint project. You're not on your own. You're doing that. Now tell me about problem people. I'm not talking about the psychopaths who haven't turned up yet or anything like that. But tell me about problem people, people who don't tell you that they have food allergies.
Food allergies, we try to...
you try to blackball.
Be sensitive to them.
Yeah.
As long as we get advance warning, it's fine. And, I mean, for me, as someone who loves pastry, it's always a nightmare when I get someone who is, you know, lactose intolerant, gluten intolerant, and hates strawberries or something. But whenever those people have come, we've made the effort, and they've always turned out to be really nice people. So, you know, keeping an open mind. Patience is key in the service industry. And it's fine. It's fine. And vegetarians are no problem. Most of my food is vegetarian anyway. And our other hosts are usually quite accommodating. So just give us warning, and we're super happy to adapt to it.
Again, like you said, these are more adventurous people anyway. They're going to be more open-minded, a little bit more, you know, towards different foods as well. Hopefully we'll have traveled a lot. I'm curious because, you know, there's a personal anecdote here. I worked for 2 summers of my life in a log cabin, which was like a sort of bed and breakfast, 12 kilometers from the nearest road up in the Rockies, in the Canadian Rockies, in a national park called Yoho. Yoho National Park. So people probably won't be able to locate that, but it's not far from Lake Louise or Banff. Those are more sort of recognized places. And now, so food is limited because we had to ship it in on donkeys, you know, donkey back. And so, you know, what would spoil, what wouldn't spoil, because we didn't have refrigerators, we didn't have electricity, we had a hole in the ground because there was permafrost underneath, so it would keep things cold, meat and relative things. And then hikers would come through, and we'd have 16 guests a night or so. And I don't enjoy cooking, but I was involved in the cooking and cleaning, so there were only 2 of us running the whole place. And one lady was just went, you know, she was vegetarian, lactose intolerant. And this, we're talking a few years back now when I probably didn't know what lactose intolerant meant. It probably wasn't, you know, we're talking back in 1994, something like that, showing my age. You know, when things were, let's say, were not as, I would say, normal. You know, things, you know, we all know what lactose intolerant is, and we all know what vegetarian veganism is, and we all know what other things is. But I remember what I had to do. The only thing I could offer her was a piece of lettuce between 2 rice cakes. That's all we had. But we were 12 kilometers from the nearest road, and you're hiking. I mean, surely someone should have, because she should have come more prepared. Because it was an era where it wasn't as normal as it is now, where we could just go, oh, hang on a second, you know, I've got something for that, and especially 12 kilometers from a road. I mean, you know, that was my experience. So it never painted these people in a good light for me, because, I mean, you know, I'm rummaging through the kitchen looking for a piece of lettuce between 2 rice cakes. I mean, I felt bad.
Yeah, you're definitely not cooking at this
pub
dinner.
I'm not a cook.
I
don't enjoy cooking. And I, you know, and I'm not tolerant of this kind of thing. If you know, and I don't particularly like seafood or shellfish, but if you put it in front of me, I'd eat it. Because it's not, you know, it's not. I would eat it.
Well, some people are actually allergic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I'm allergic to lobster.
People are nice. People come and people eat. You just reminded me that we're organizing a dinner, a fairy tale dinner in a forest.
Fairy tale dinner in a forest?
In the new year. Yes.
Where?
With a local restaurant here. Well, we're looking for the forest.
Okay.
But
there's plenty of forests around.
Yes. So basically a lot of plans.
That'd be cool, because you could put up a little marquee tent. Because in case it rains.
In case it rains, we could do that. Just make it really beautiful.
Yeah.
We're doing weeknight dinners on Wednesday or Thursdays, depending, for people who just want to not cook. So you can come to that.
All right, perfect. I'm really good at not cooking.
Great.
But I do cook. I can cook. I don't derive any pleasure, any enjoyment from it at all. I periodically poison myself because I hate waste as well. So I'll cook even if it looks bad. But let's not talk about that. There's too much of an insight into my personality and foibles. Remind us again, it's BogotaPopUps.com. You're on Facebook, I imagine, as
We're
well.
We're actually not. We're underground.
Wow. You're not going to go on
Facebook. Well, see, I'm working on it.
Okay. You will be on Facebook. As soon as you're on Facebook, we'll promote you on there. But we'll promote the website as well on Facebook and on Twitter and so on. I don't think you need the guests and the clientele, because you're telling me that you're always filling up. But equally, it's always good to have new, fresh faces.
On Instagram to see our pictures.
And so
we're
just
always looking for our hosts. So if anyone wants to organize a really cool dinner party or some kind of food and culture-related event, please email me.
There you go. There you go. It's a call for hosts. A call for chefs as well. A call for hosts and chefs.
But you don't have to be a chef, so don't feel...
Instagram, it's just Bogota Pop-Ups.
Yeah.
There we go. There you can find it there. I'm going to go look at it now, but I will promote this. And I wish you all the greatest success.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. It has been really fun talking to you. You've been very open. You didn't want to talk about the World Food Protection food Program, but we got you to talk about it, a little bit of contemporary Colombia. Listen, if you want to get in touch with Sara Lisa or Ostovic, that's through the volatilepopups.com website, or of course you can come through Columbia Calling, our website, of course columbiacallingradio.com, columbiacalling@gmail, Facebook, Twitter. I don't think we're on Instagram yet, but at some point I am personally, but I don't think I'm going to go on as Columbia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a really fun interview, something a bit of a different, culturally exciting. And I know there's people out there who are either thinking of coming to Columbia or perhaps here in Columbia who want to do something different and perhaps be connected to a more local, a part of society. So, get in touch. This is some way of, getting beyond, being just a tourist. You're getting in touch with local people. So thank you again, Sarah Lisa Orstovic. That's www.bogotapocops.com. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling. And be sure to tune in next week.